Okay, good afternoon, good evening. Good evening, everyone. Very warm welcome to you all this evening. And I am going to try again to aim for 30 minutes. This week's answers, if you like, answer sheet, aid memoir has gone round. There's also copies of last week's, if you weren't here. It's lovely to see some different people here this evening. So if you weren't here, there's a copy of what we talked about last week. And apparently we're on the internet as well, so... let's all be careful what we say this evening.
It is
on the
internet.
Is it?
There is going to be a sign-up sheet, which I
don't know.
So people can sign up in advance as well for 8 sessions if they want
more
views.
Wow, that's brilliant. Okay, I won't listen to what I said, that would be scary. What we're doing is we're going to take 8 weeks, we're now into the second week, and just looking at some tools and some ideas and thoughts about how we might share our faith, and particularly focusing on what Peter says in his second letter, where he says, always be ready to give a reason for the hope that you have, and do so with gentleness and respect. And I was talking to Hannah earlier, and I know some other people have had some experiences this week. I had 3 things this week. One person was doing a presentation to a lot of very important people, and he said, of course, in the Old Testament, you could have 2 wives. In the New Testament, you can only have 1 wife. That was news to me, but it did allow me to have a bit of a conversation afterwards about that. And then on Friday, I was at a sort of big do in the evening, and in 2 different groups of people, I said that I used to be a geologist, and they all said, ooh, well, what led you to becoming a chaplain? So again, it was exactly what we were talking about last Sunday. I didn't have to plan anything. I didn't have to invite anyone to anything. I didn't have to do any photocopying or anything. God just brought people to me and then required me to be ready to give an answer for the hope that I have. And that's kind of evangelism. And so it's helpful that we practice and we prepare ourselves and we understand quite what we can say to people, what we should say to people, because it's an opportunity. And we could just wing it and just see how it goes and just say whatever comes to us at the time. But has that ever worked out well for anyone, really? You know, it doesn't tend to. It's best to practice and prepare. So this evening, what we're going to do is we're actually going to look at the message. We're going to look at what the gospel is. And I'm going to take 10 minutes of your time just to cover the entire Bible, and then I'm going to take another 5 or so minutes just to cover it again. So we'll do the Bible twice this evening, and then a little opportunity for you to do a bit more preparation for your own story afterwards. So Paul writes to the Corinthian church, and he says this, "Now, brothers, I want to remind you of the gospel I preached to you, which you received and on which you have taken your stand. By this gospel you are saved, if you hold firmly to the word I preach to you. Otherwise you have believed in vain. For what I received I passed on to you as of first importance, that Christ died for our sins according to the scriptures." Basically he says, I've got good news. Now in the ancient world, good news was really important. People lived pretty miserable lives, and they didn't have 24-hour news cycles and all that kind of stuff. Any news was important, but good news, what we call the euangelion, or where we get the word gospel from, is you know, people would hang out for it. And it's not just Christian, the use of the word, but obviously the good news, the best news you can possibly have, is about God coming into the world through his son. And so the church used this and said, this is the good news that we've received and that we have to then pass on to others. And Paul talks about it as if it's a body of knowledge. It's something that you receive, that you listen to, that you think about, and then you pass on. And it's that body of knowledge that is the gospel. It's not just, as we said last week, it's not just Jesus loves you. He does, that's the truth, but that's a statement, and it's not the gospel. Because what does it mean that Jesus loves you? Especially if you speak to 40% of the people who don't think that Jesus is real, you know, it's meaningless. You need to be saved. Again, that's a truth, but what does it mean? It's not the gospel as such. The gospel is this message, and I think he kind of sums it up at the end in verse 3, where he says, Christ died for our sins according to the scriptures. Well, what does that mean? So let me take 10 minutes of your time. I'm going to ask you for the answers. I'm simply going to kind of do some stuff. But I'm going to do it military style, so this is without batteries. This is, I have ordered a CD-ROM, which I could have done, but I didn't get it in time. But so we're going to do it old-fashioned style. I could do this in the middle of a wood somewhere, but we're not. We're in a nice place here. But hopefully you can see it. So this is history, okay? And this is the beginning of time, and this is the future, okay? Now, we're going to talk about the Bible story. What does the Bible start with? Anyone remember? Creation, brilliant. Well, there we go. We have creation, don't we? So creation, and what happened in creation?
God made the world.
God made the world, yeah. Okay, well, let's put that there. That's the world, isn't it? That's the world. And anything in particular in that world that was pretty good?
Us,
Adam and Eve. So we've got Adam and Eve. And then what happened next? Yeah. Two chapters, all going really well. Then, and it was the woman, wasn't it? Eve. What did Eve do? All the trees in the world you could have. Just don't touch one tree. All the trees in the world. Just, in fact, you can touch the tree. Don't touch the fruit of the tree. And typical, you know, don't touch that. What do you want to do? You want to touch it, don't you? So it's what we call a theological term, but it's called the fall. What happened next?
Banished from the garden.
Yes, absolutely. Before we get there, but banished from the garden, all kinds of bad things. And basically, it went from bad to really, really bad, didn't it? And it got worse and worse and worse. All kinds of things happen. The first murder and all kinds of adultery and idolatry and everything. And I pretty much sum up how bad it went, really, with... Anyone know what that picture might represent? Anyone apart from Pastor Phil? Anyone? The Tower of Babel, thank you. Yeah, so the Tower of Babel. What's the Tower of Babel all about? Yeah, so basically it's people got to a point very quickly after creation where they all turn around and say, we don't need God. So we just get rid of God. We don't need God. We can live without God. And because of that, now whenever I travel abroad, I have to learn a new language. French, the whole reason for the language of French is sin, basically. So there I am. But it, as grim and as dark as it becomes very quickly, what happens next? Go on, what happens next?
The covenant,
yeah. God meets, who does he meet? He meets someone, doesn't he? Abraham, yeah, okay. Abraham. And he meets Abraham, and he makes a pledge to Abraham. Actually, I've got Abraham there you go. And what does he say to Abraham? I'm going to make you a great nation and bless all peoples on the world. So it's not just a Jewish thing, is it? He promises to bless the whole world and fill the world with blessing and so on. So that is a real sign of great hope. And then through Abraham, Abraham has one child, doesn't he? And then through that becomes, what comes, what's his promise to Abraham? Actually, sorry, great nation, isn't it? Yeah, so you end up with Joseph, technicolor dream coat, and all that kind of stuff, and they end up in Egypt, and of course that all goes really well for a little while, and then it ends up quite badly. And so what happens to the Israelites in Egypt? Slavery and all that kind of stuff. And so they cry out to God, and God answers them and sends someone, doesn't he? Who does he send? He sends Moses, doesn't he? Yeah, and Moses then leads them from slavery, Exodus from... Okay, anyway, there's an arrow there. And leads them away to a mountain, a big mountain where they meet with God. And there's this great picture of God at the top of the mountain and everyone too scared to go near God. And so they say, Moses, you go on your own. And Moses goes up there and comes away with some tablets, doesn't he? Take two and call me in the morning. And basically, I think that there was already some sense of what God requires of people, but he kind of codifies it into, effectively, 10 things, which Jesus sums up in two things, which are, what are the two things that Jesus sums up? Love God and love one another. Love one another. And we call this the law, and obviously Moses is the character that instigates that. And then from there, the story goes into, finally, into what we call the promised land. The promised land. And it all looks like everything has been rescued from this great creation to the terrible fall, and suddenly the Israelites are in their own land, and it all seems great. But actually, it's all fallen a bit short. It's not quite what was promised, and it certainly doesn't seem to be blessing the whole world, and so on. But a lot of things happen in there. What they do end up with is kings, even though God warned them that wasn't going to work out too well for them, so they end up with kings. Give me a good king. David. Okay, we've got King David. Was David a good guy? Yeah, most of the time, wasn't he? And we also end up with, we end up with the kings, and we end up with the prophet. So we end up with people who speak from God to the people and warn the people and tell the people and guide the people and so on. But very quickly, well, in fact, it never really, there was a few high points for a very short period of time, but very quickly it goes badly wrong and they lose the promised land and it's what we call the exile and they're off. And they're off away from the promised land. And effectively, that's the Old Testament. How long does that take? That's the Old Testament. And it ends. Am I right? The last word in Malachi in the Hebrew is death or coffin. I think it's coffin, yeah. So it's death. It ends pretty badly, doesn't it? It starts for those first two chapters, if anyone could stay there, really, really well. And it goes rapidly downhill because people turn away from God and try to live as if there is no God. And God sort of works in them. But you get to the end of the Old Testament, and all you have at the end of the Old Testament is promises. It's a bit like this morning's children's talk, which I thought was absolutely fantastic. And you've got these promises of God, and there are lots of promises in the Bible from God. And then the New Testament, and the fulfillment of the promises of the Old Testament. So you get Jesus, you get him coming into the world, living as we look today. You get his death, the death of Jesus, and then the resurrection and the raising of Jesus. And then what comes after that? Pentecost. You do. The church, yes. So you get the Pentecost and people talking about Jesus and the gospel going into the world. And then what comes after that? It's the period of time that we're in now. What do we call the period of time we're in now? I don't know what you call it, but what you should call it is the last days. Yeah, so that is where we live now, and we live in the last days, as the New Testament puts it. Waiting for something. What are we waiting for? We touched again on this morning, didn't we, in the sermon? For the second coming, the return of Jesus. And when Jesus returns, the promise, the book of Revelation, is new heaven, new earth, home of righteousness. People will live with God hand in hand. And there will be peace. There will be no need to lock your doors. No need for car alarms. Everything will be wonderful. Cars won't have emissions and all that kind of stuff. All good stuff, I presume, is going to happen. And what we effectively call the new creation. And the reversal of Babel. So no more French. And everyone will live together. Everyone will be friends. And I wasn't going to tell them all, but yes, absolutely. So that is the whole Bible. Now, I get people who say to me, you know, there's a difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament, like that guy did on Wednesday. But actually, it's interesting when you look at it in its entirety, how it just describes one story. It's a great story, far better than Lord of the Rings and all that kind of stuff. But it is an amazing story, isn't it? A real kind of epic. But it does all fit together. And it all goes in a place. And often I will get people will talk about the God of the Old Testament being the God of war, for instance, particularly in a military context, and the New Testament being about peace. So difference between Jesus and God. Actually, I think wrath occurs more in the New Testament than it does in the Old Testament. And grace occurs an awful lot in the Old Testament. It just hasn't reached its fulfillment. But what you do see is all the way through is God is still there. Even though people reject him, turn their backs on him, live as if he doesn't exist, he is still actually in control. And you see in the genealogy of Jesus, for instance, how God has worked in an amazing way through kingdoms rising, kingdoms falling, all kinds of turmoil, even to the point at which it all hangs on one or two people and decisions that are made by sinful people, and still God brings Jesus at the right time into the world. So God rules and God saves, and obviously, as we saw this morning, through Jesus. So what you could say is the Old Testament is very much the foundation and the New Testament is very much the fulfillment of the story, but that is the gospel. And that actually describes not only history, biblical history, real history, God's plans and purposes and everything, but it also impacts my life in a very real way. So why is it that this matters to me? Here I am in what we call the last days, 2016. Why does this matter to me? Well, this matters to me, doesn't it? Because the reason there are problems in my life, because of what happened with Adam and Eve and what affects the whole of humanity. The reason why sometimes I feel like Paul, when I know the good that I should do and I don't do it, and I know the bad that I shouldn't do and I do it, why? Well, it's because of this, isn't it? So this explains so much. The book of Genesis explains so much. And just as an aside, there's a real issue and a great conversation starter about evolution, because evolution and this story really don't match. They don't work. The evolution really kind of negates a lot of what happens later with Jesus. It doesn't make a lot of sense of this. So there's a real kind of conversation there, which we won't have right now because I don't have nearly enough time. But it explains my life and why I am where I am. It also helps us see God in a bit of a better picture, because again, you have wars and God inspiring wars, or God, you know, I have this regularly, God causes violence and religion causes violence and so on. And actually, it doesn't in this context. You can see there are reasons why certain things happen. And the chaos and the devastation that sin causes. There was, I was on the internet and something popped up about, I'm going to forget his name now, actor, comedian, who was railing against God in an interview and saying he can't understand why children get diseases and what kind of God would allow children to get diseases and illness. And he refuses to believe in a God who does that. But of course, we then come and look at this and we see why there is so much devastation in the world. And as much as we'd want to blame God, actually, that people have made choices and there are consequences to those choices. And we find ourselves here. But because of God's love, he's doing something about it. And we talked about the promises. And yes, sometimes we have to wait for the fulfillment of the promises, like the second coming of Jesus. And we can understand Peter in context now, can't we? Where is the second coming of Jesus? It's been 2,000 years since he talked about it. But Peter says he's not slow in keeping his promise. He will come, but just at the right time, as everything else happened in its right time. So that's the big picture. Now, I wouldn't expect you, if you sat down in Costa Coffee with a friend, that you whip that out, because that probably won't fit on the table. But in your notes, there is a copy of that. And I think this is what we need to know as Christians. This is the gospel in its entirety. What we need to take out with us is just a kind of sense of where it all goes and how we can explain it to someone fairly quickly. So what I'm going to do now is just kind of give you a quick overview of it. And there's a quote in, there's a great book, which is, if you want to read, it's a thick book, heavy book, by a guy called Donald Carson, called The Gagging of God, which speaks about how we as Christians can tackle today's culture. And he's a clever guy, but he writes quite simply, but there's a lot of profound things in there. But he talks about this issue, about Christians knowing the big story and being explaining it to people. Because so many people don't know who Jesus is. They definitely don't know who David or Moses or the law or all that kind of stuff. They've got no idea, no idea whatsoever. So what do you do? And he actually suggests that this is one tool that is really, really useful. And basically, on a napkin, over a cup of coffee, you look like you're about to play noughts and crosses, but you got it wrong. You want a really quick game, but that's not the case, actually. What you do is you do this. And again, it's in your notes. But basically, when God created the world and put us on the world with the intention that he would rule over the world. And he made this world perfect. This world is an amazing place. When you look at the astronomers looking out for other planets around the universe, it's fascinating because everyone is really confused as to why this world is so perfect. And it is just absolutely made for us. It's perfect size, perfect shape, perfect distance with the moon, without which we wouldn't have life, all that kind of stuff. Absolutely perfect. And God has made us and put us on this planet and said, this is your world. This is yours to look after and to be with. But under the authority of God. God is God. That's really important to understand. When I look in the mirror in the morning, I'm reminded I am not God. He is God, and he is unlike me. I am not God. However, we live in a world where very quickly, as we just seen in that big story, people don't like that idea. And so what they do is they get rid of the idea of God. They either get rid of God altogether, or they create God in their own image, or they just ignore him, full stop. And people love to be in charge of their own lives. And if you want an answer, a simple answer to why there are so many problems in the world, who is, as someone says to me quite frequently, the cause of wars is religion, isn't it? Actually, no, it's not. It's people. And it's people not listening, for instance, to the commandments, love God, love your neighbor. You wouldn't go to war with someone if you love your neighbor. All these kind of issues. So people reject God, and they want to be in charge of their own lives. And that sounds okay, doesn't it? That's fine. However, the thing is, if you ignore God and reject God, that doesn't stop him being there. You know, it's like when you were younger, you wanted to kind of, you've been scared by something, you close your eyes and pretend it wasn't there. You're watching Doctor Who or something, you put your hands over your eyes. Doctor Who was still there. But, you know, you ignore him, he's still there. And the problem is, he is God, and this is his world, and there are consequences to ignoring him. And indeed, he says, if we break his laws, if we hurt other people, we ignore him, we don't do things the way he asked us to do it, there are consequences. And the immediate consequence is death. Now, it's okay, it's not immediate in that sometimes we can live a long life, but we still die. At some point, all of us will die. And there is a physical death, but then there's also spiritual death, isn't there? And it kind of makes sense. The way I explain it is if you reject God in your life, you really don't want God to be telling you what to do or giving you rules and regulations, you're not going to want to live with God for eternity, are you? So God has made a place where you can go, where you will be outside of his rule, as it were, his love and his grace. And that's basically the consequence of death, of sin, of rejecting God, is death. But don't misunderstand who God is. God is a loving God. And so God, because he loves us so much, actually sent his son into the world to rescue us. Despite what we have done and the way we've lived and the way we've rejected him, God loves us enough to send his son, Jesus, into the world. And Jesus comes into the world to overturn everything that we have done, to mess it up. So our sin, our rebellion against God, Jesus comes, and on the cross, God puts the punishment for all our sin on him, and he dies in our place if we allow him. And so he takes the punishment for our sin, he takes the consequences, which is death, and dies the death that we deserved to live, the separation of God. That's why he cries, my God, why have you forsaken me? And then to prove that he has done what he has done, he is resurrected and ascended and rules right now in heaven over the universe. And that's the reality of where we are. Whether we agree with it or not, whether we like it or not, that's the reality of the world in which we live. Now, the thing is, you have a choice. And I love this bit. This is brilliant. Because God gives us great freedom, doesn't he? He gives us freedom to make decisions. Now, you can carry on living as if you are in charge of your world. Deep down, I'm pretty sure you know you're not, but God gives you the freedom to make your own decisions and own choices and reap the consequences as much as you want to. However, if you don't want to do that anymore, you can place yourself under the authority of his son, and he will bring that forgiveness and that new life and that eternal life into your life and give you an eternity with him. But that's your choice. He doesn't force it upon you. And I love it when people talk about people forcing religion down their throats. I don't know how you do that. That sounds hard work. It also sounds a bit painful, doesn't it, forcing religion down someone's throat. But God doesn't do that. God is very gracious. But there is a time coming when that choice is no longer available, and there are consequences to our choices. But that is, you know, on a napkin over a coffee in a cafe, you've pretty much summed up creation. And you've allowed people to sort of get a bit of context that people don't have anymore. And there are some advantages to all of this, because you've got the issue of law and grace. What about, you know, I'm a good person, really. I try to live a good life and do good things. But of course, the question is, well, what about the bad things you have done already? You know, does God just ignore them? God brush them under the carpet, you know, the ways you have hurt people in the past and so on. I could live a really perfect life from now on to the rest of my life, but what about the stuff I've already done? Does God ignore that? You know, in society we don't ignore that, do we? We have historical inquiries into crimes that people have committed coming up. We have every now and then there's a murder that was committed 50 years ago and new evidence comes out, and we don't ignore that in society. God doesn't ignore anything. So law is not enough to save you. We need God's grace. So you've got faith, you've got law, you've got grace, so you've got all those kind of issues. And we could talk about other religions and so on and so forth. There are all kinds of different ways you could present the gospel. One that we used to use was the bridge. I don't know if you've seen this. So you've got you on that side and God, forgive me, God on that side. And of course, Jesus, you're separated because of your sin, and Jesus comes and the cross bridges that, which is great, but it presumes you know so much. It presumes so much context and so on, which doesn't have. The other advantage of this is pictures. I like pictures. You know, there's no great tract with lots of words to read and quotes from great people to read. It's just pictures, you know, and I love the idea that actually it puts it back into people's lives and says, you've got a choice. You know, God is a loving God and he gives you great freedom. What are you going to do about it? It's not up to me. I know what I've done. So there you are. Any questions or comments? Anyone think it's rubbish? You're on microphone. No. No.
Have you used it in earnest with success?
Success is an interesting one. I have used it, yeah. And it's interesting because you can dip in and out. You don't have to do the whole thing. But I think because it sort of gives you the beginning to the end, it does help people to sort of see what you're talking about. Now, what they've done with that afterwards, I can't always vouch for. But
listen to the story.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I think it is, I'm using that illustration. You could do it in any way. You could do it on a blackboard or anything. But honestly, a napkin in a coffee shop is a great place to do it. Whereas, you know, you can't lay out that kind of thing. But this is also a little bit more personal, because you could talk about, you know, being a good person or about other religions. Because again, you know, the other religion piece, Christianity, other religions do sometimes have elements of grace in them, but generally they tend to be quite legalistic. So, you know, God asks you to do this, you're okay, you don't do this, you're not okay. Whereas Christianity is, it doesn't matter whether you do good or bad, you're in trouble anyway, because, you know, there's always bad in your life. Why is it? Well, you know, it goes back to creation and the fall, but God is gracious and it brings in grace. So it's useful in lots of ways. And I tend to have a little, you can get postcards. Sorry, I tried to get enough postcards for people, but it's on your notes. But I have that in my diary, which I just carry around me as a reminder. So it is useful. And again, I think pictures, we live in a very visual age. You can download the pictures from the internet as well, which is where I got them from there, yeah. Yeah. None of this is mine. I haven't invented any of this. This is, the Good Book Company produce the materials, certainly for this, and I think you can probably get the Two Ways to Live, but you certainly download some of it on the internet. It's very useful, but there's no copyright. I think it's designed to take away with you and use if it's helpful for you. But it is one tool out of many, and it's one aspect of evangelism. But as I say, a few of you this week have found that people have spoken to you or you know, asked a question or raised an issue with you, and it's just about having something in your pocket to be able to say, well, let's look at this. Let's just take some time. And it takes minutes to do.
Where did you get the postcards from? Is that from Good Book?
I got them from the Good Book Company, yeah. So if you Google no spaces, Good Book Company, I think, or Good Book, .co.uk, yeah.
Just talking about success of that, when my eldest dad Richard was converted, they gave him that, and the instruction for him that week was to go into a coffee shop and to talk somebody through it.
Was it?
In terms of success, he didn't learn it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Immediately after being saved,
Don't hesitate. Yeah. We won't do that. We've run out of time this evening, so we're not going to have a practice. But success is an interesting one. I think if someone has listened to you and not walked out on you, or they've asked questions through it, then I think that's success, isn't it? You know, because I mean, it took me. It was a real journey of years for me to become a Christian, to make that decision. And I think, I, we've got to recognize that everyone's on a journey. And sometimes you intersect someone's life, and you never know what goes on. And it'd be great if you are at that point at which they do that. But you can't take any glory at that point, because inevitably it would have been conversations further down. That's the blessing of being a pastor and walking with people for a period of their lives. But yeah. I think success is being faithful to God in any context, isn't it? And just having that ability to do that. We have kind of run out, and I don't want to steal from this morning's sermon, but the homework, if I could ask you, in preparation for next week, my friend Paul next week is going to be talking to us about testimony and about sharing your own story. And I think stories are very important. It's always a context to the Bible, it's a context to your life and my life, you know, and people are interested in that. So last week we asked you to draw a timeline and sort of look at some significant events that have happened spiritually that have brought you to this point of faith in your life. What I'd like you to go away with this week is to write four sentences down that describe that. So not onerous, not a lot of writing, but just four sentences. If you can sum that timeline up in four sentences, so you could then share that with someone. I don't want you to do that if you want to. I'm not going to ask you to do that. But if you can just write four sentences that describe your timeline, where you were and how you now come to know Jesus, why's and wherefores. But just keep it simple. And then Paul's going to take it a little bit further next Sunday. Thank you.